What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me, about to get them, all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, amigos. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Welcome back, my friends. What day is it today, anyway? Fuck it. Let's talk about the Drew Bloods Dark Tale Spooky Season 2025 Rotten Contest. Sure, Chester, whatever. Anyway, if you're an author or aspiring author and or a fan of the show, you can submit your story to www.creepypastastories.com/submissions and begin the title with Dark Tales Spooky Season 2025 Rotten Contest Entry. The contest closes October 3rd, so you've got 1 week left. The winner gets his or her story performed and produced by yours truly for our Halloween season episode on October 26th. And our top three finishers will all receive free Drew Bloods Dark Tales t-shirts. Hey, those could be worth something one day. Also, all qualified entries will be published on creepypastastories.com and voted on by our readers. Hey, that's a credit, y'all. Just a few things to keep in mind, though. A minimum of 3,000 words. We recommend under 13,000 words. Must comply with YouTube content guidelines, must be original and unpublished, and must be 18 or above. So check the show notes for the link, friend. I look forward to it. Anyway, come on in, let's get this party started. So tonight we welcome back our old pal, N.M. Brown. This one's a campy dark comedy from a recent anthology she appears in, Tales from the Lark Side, a horror comedy anthology. And for extra shits and giggles, I brought along our pal Jeff Sturdivant to play Saul. Gee, I wonder why he picked that character. Anyway, without further delay, from author N.M. Brown, I give you Hell in Hawaiian Print.
I'm not proud of how it started. If I'd known then what I know now, I would have walked right past that thrift shop without even glancing at the window display. But hindsight is 20/20, and I'm an idiot, so here we are. Let me back up a little. See, I've been single for a while, and I spent more time than I'd like to admit scrolling through this Facebook group my ex introduced me to. It's called Weird Secondhand Finds That Just Need to Be Shared. You've probably heard of it. It's like digital catnip for people who collect creepy dolls, cursed-looking furniture, and other odds and ends you'd never actually want in your home. My ex may have left, but the group and I, we're tight. Anyway, one Saturday I was out hunting for something to post, preferably a creepy Victorian painting or a set of taxidermied squirrels playing poker. You know, something fun. But instead, I found it. The pineapple shirt. It was hanging on the clearance rack like it had been waiting for me, obnoxiously bright and covered in tiny embroidered pineapples wearing sunglasses. The stitching was immaculate, every pineapple smugly cool, like it knew it was better than me. And the shirt wasn't some cheap mass-produced thing either. I could tell someone had painstakingly stitched those pineapples by hand. My mom sewed all the pillowcases in our house growing up, so I recognized the craftsmanship. That was half the appeal. The other half? Well, it was just ugly enough to be ironic, but not so ugly I couldn't wear it. It had that perfect balance, tropical, whimsical, and just pretentious enough to convince people I had a sense of humor about fashion. Naturally, I bought it. $5. What a steal. That night, I wore the shirt to a small barbecue my friend Greg was hosting. Greg's the kind of guy who thinks charcoal grills are for amateurs and owns more pair of cargo shorts than anyone over the age of 15 should legally be allowed. But he's got good beer and decent taste in music, so I tolerate him. The shirt was an instant hit. People laughed, complimented me, and asked where I got it. One woman, an aspiring Etsy influencer, actually offered to buy it off me for triple what I paid. Triple! However, our host Greg was less impressed.
What the hell, man? You look like you've just walked out of a Jimmy Buffett fan convention,
he said, shoving a plate of ribs into my hands. Oh, come on, I shot back. This shirt's a vibe. Look at the pineapples. They've got sunglasses. You can't argue with sunglasses.
Greg rolled his eyes, but wouldn't you know it? An hour later, he was the one asking to borrow it.
Just for a second,
he said, tugging it off me without waiting for a real answer.
I've got a date tomorrow, and this thing is ridiculous enough to work.
I let him take it. Why not? He had always been a good friend, and I figured if a pineapple shirt could help him score a second date, I'd consider it a public service. I didn't hear from Greg again until the next morning, but that's not exactly true either. See, I didn't hear from him. I heard about him. The phone call was short and horrifying. Greg had died.
According to the police report, he'd been walking to meet his date when he slipped on a stray ketchup packet and stumbled straight into a hot dog cart. The cart tipped over, the propane tank exploded, and Greg didn't make it. The cops said it was a freak accident. No one could have seen it coming. In the beginning, they couldn't tell human meat from wiener meat, or even human wiener meat. The smell must have been something to behold all on its own. I tried to convince myself they were right. Accidents happen after all, but then the paramedic mentioned something strange. When they found Greg's body, he was wearing my shirt, and it wasn't burned or torn or even dirty. Somehow, the pineapple shirt was pristine, like nothing had happened at all. I didn't think too much of it at the time. I mean, what are the odds that a shirt, an inanimate piece of fabric, could be responsible for someone's death? That would be ridiculous, right? If I'd only known.
Greg's funeral was awkward, but not because of Greg, though. Greg was great, in life and apparently in death, because even his eulogies were funny. One of his cousins got up and told this story about how Greg once got banned from a laser tag arena for smuggling in glow sticks and pretending to be a raver in the middle of a war zone. Classic Greg. No, it was awkward because of the shirt, or rather because I had to take the shirt back. Look, I know how bad that sounds, but in my defense, I wasn't trying to be disrespectful. It's just, Greg's mom handed it to me. She pulled me aside after the service, holding a plain paper bag with a nervous look on her face.
This was Greg's,
she said, like that was an explanation.
I thought you might want it. Something to remember him by.
She sputtered out before a fresh set of tears overtook her senses. There it was, folded neatly in the bag. Those stupid pineapple sunglasses practically winking at me. I didn't know what to say. What's the protocol for something like this? Thanks for returning the shirt my best friend died wearing? No, that wasn't it. So I just nodded, muttered something incoherent, and took it. I couldn't bring myself to wear it again after that. It stayed in the bag for weeks, shoved into the back of my closet. Out of sight and out of mind. At least that was what I told myself.
Every so often, though, I'd catch a glimpse of it while looking for something else. A belt, my winter coat, and it would send a little shiver down my spine. Now, I wasn't scared, of course. That would have been ridiculous. It was just a shirt, a stupid shirt. And Greg's death had been a freak accident, a coincidence, nothing more. Right? Fast forward to Saturday. My sister Karen was visiting, which is always a test of patience. Karen's one of those people who can't just say, "Oh, your place is nice." No, she has to critique your decorating choices, question your career path, and give unsolicited advice on your non-existent dating life. By the time she had got around to reorganizing my spice rack for efficiency, I was about ready to throw her ass out. But then she found a shirt.
"What is this?"
she asked, holding it up like it was radioactive.
"Did you join a ska band?"
I rolled my eyes. "It's just a shirt, Karen. Put it back."
"It's hideous,"
she said, completely ignoring me.
"Oh my God, are these pineapples wearing sunglasses?"
"Yes," I said through gritted teeth. "It's a novelty shirt. People like it. Now put it back." But Karen being Karen, she didn't.
"This would be perfect for my tiki party next weekend,"
she said, already slipping it on.
"I'm borrowing it."
I should have said no. I should have ripped it out of her hands, thrown it in the trash, and set the trash on fire just to be safe. But you don't argue with Karen. Not unless you want to be reminded of every embarrassing moment from your childhood. So I let her take it. The party was on Tuesday. The obituary was on Wednesday. I didn't get the full story until later, but apparently Karen had worn the t-shirt to her tiki party, where she had one too many Mai Tais and decided to show off her hula skills by dancing on top of a deck chair. The chair collapsed, Karen went flying, and she landed face first in the flaming tiki torch. It should have been tragic, but when the coroner described the whole thing as a death by overconfidence, I actually snorted. Then I felt bad. Then I laughed again. What? Karen would have appreciated the irony. When I got the shirt back this time, I didn't hesitate. I drove straight to the nearest Goodwill and dropped it in the donation bin. No note, no explanation. Just a quick toss and a prayer that I'd never see it again. I didn't even make it home before my phone buzzed. It was a text from Greg's mom. "Hi, honey," it read. "Just a heads up, I was donating some of Greg's things when I noticed that someone left your nice pineapple shirt at the donation center. I know it must have been a mistake, so I picked it up for you. I'll drop it by later." I nearly drove off the road. When Greg's mom dropped off the shirt, I tried to act normal. I even smiled as I took the bag from her hands, muttering thanks, like she had returned my favorite childhood toy instead of the harbinger of death. I guess deep down, her making it safely over here with the shirt in tow made me feel better. Like maybe this whole thing was a sickening coincidence after all.
"Such a fun shirt,"
she said with a wistful smile.
"Greg must have loved it."
"Yeah," I said, my voice straining to stay polite. "It's great." We said our goodbyes and I closed the door before locking it tightly. I stared at the bag like it was a live grenade. It had come back. Again. It seemed that no matter what I did, the shirt was like a boomerang. A horrifyingly cheerful pineapple-covered boomerang. That night, my better head prevailed as I decided to take action. Real action. No more donation bins and no more half measures. The shirt had already claimed two lives, and if I didn't do something drastic, it was only a matter of time before someone else became pineapple shirt victim number three. I tried shredding it. I grabbed a pair of scissors, then a box cutter, then a kitchen knife. Nothing worked. The fabric wouldn't tear, and every time I got close, my hand started cramping up like I'd been typing an angry manifesto for 6 hours straight. By the time I gave up, I was sweating and out of breath, staring at a shirt that hadn't so much as frayed under my assault. It just lay there on my kitchen counter, mocking me with its tiny embroidered pineapples. I even called a priest. Well, technically, I emailed him. Urgent exorcism request, the subject line read. I explained vaguely that I had an item in my possession that seemed to be cursed and needed spiritual cleansing. Father Richard responded within the hour. We don't do objects. Perhaps try eBay? Thanks, Father. Super helpful. At this point, I was desperate. Sleep was impossible. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw Greg's stupid grin or Karen's smug face or that damn obituary headline, Tiki Party Tragedy. The shirt wasn't just ruining my life, it was haunting me. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't even look at a pineapple without breaking into a cold sweat. That's when my buddy Saul called. Saul, the only person I knew who would find humor in my pineapple plague. I debated ignoring him, but the whiskey was kicking in, and maybe some gallows humor would do me some good. Saul, you're not going to believe this, I said, skipping the pleasantries.
Did you finally make it into that weirdo Facebook group you've been obsessed with?
No, worse. I explained everything. The shirt, the death, the bizarre return. Saul predictably laughed until I thought he'd choke.
The shirt is cursed? And people keep dying around it?
He wheezed.
Dude, it's like a low-budget Final Destination.
Thanks for the sympathy, Saul. But then Saul had an idea. His first in months that wasn't beer-related.
Why don't you donate it to the church rummage sale? It's next weekend. Let someone else deal with it. Bonus, if it's at a church, maybe God will step in and fix it.
I didn't want to admit it, but it wasn't the worst plan I'd ever heard. The shirt needed to go, and if God wanted to smite someone, better a random rummage sale shopper than me. The following Saturday, I carried the shirt into St. Margaret's Fellowship Hall. The place smelled like old hymnals and overly sweet coffee, and the rummage tables were already groaning under the weight of secondhand knickknacks. I set the shirt on a rack between a velvet Elvis painting and a vintage toaster. For the first time in weeks, I felt a glimmer of hope. Until, of course, Saul showed up.
Dude, this place is packed,
he said, slapping my shoulder like we were at a sports bar.
Half the town's here. Someone's bound to buy that thing.
Yeah, that's the problem, I muttered. I don't want it to kill anyone else. Saul shrugged, sipping what I suspected was heavily spiked lemonade from a styrofoam cup.
Hey, life's a gamble.
As if on cue, a middle-aged woman approached the shirt. She had the kind of enthusiasm you only see in bargain hunters and lottery winners.
Oh, isn't this adorable?
She cooed, holding it up against herself.
What a fun shirt!
I froze. My mouth opened, but no words came out. I couldn't warn her, not without sounding like a lunatic. Instead, I just stood there paralyzed as she paid $2 for the shirt and left.
See? Problem solved.
If only. The next morning, the local news reported a freak accident at a tiki-themed funeral. Yes, a tiki funeral. Turns out the woman who bought the shirt had decided it would be perfect for her late husband's celebration of life. But during the service, a rogue flaming tiki torch had fallen, igniting not just the shirt, but the entire buffet table. The fire spread faster than anyone could react, and though no one died, thank God, the woman ended up hospitalized with third-degree burns. Saul called me as soon as he saw the news.
Dude, you're famous,
he said, snickering.
Tiki funeral inferno? That's legendary.
I was not amused. I knew then that the shirt wasn't done with me. Sure, it had left my possession, but it was still out there, wreaking havoc. And no matter how far it went, I felt tied to it, like it had branded me its eternal caretaker. By the end of the week, it was back at my doorstep. This time, it wasn't folded neatly in a bag. No, it had been crammed into my mailbox, singed and reeking of smoke. And with it was a new note. I'm still hot stuff. Love, P. That night, as I stared at the shirt and the smoldering remnants of my will to live, I made a vow. I wouldn't just get rid of the shirt. I'd destroy it, once and for all. But first, I needed a drink. And maybe a backup plan.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
I woke up the next morning with a pounding headache and the shirt draped over the back of my chair like some macabre trophy. The smoke smell still lingered, and I swore the embroidered pineapples looked smug, as if they were laughing at me.
"This is it," I muttered. "You're going down."
Saul, ever the loyal chaos enthusiast, arrived within the hour.
"So what's the plan?"
he asked, plopping onto my couch and immediately spilling chips on the floor.
"Exorcism? Sacrifice? You gonna send it to hell? Like they did with the doll in Child's Play?"
I ignored him and pointed to the backyard. "We're burning it," I said. Saul looked disappointed.
"That's kind of basic."
Outside, I stacked wood into a fire pit that hadn't seen action since last summer's ill-fated s'mores night, which involved more flaming marshmallows than actual roasting. Saul, as usual, was no help.
"You sure this is gonna work?"
he asked, munching on a hot dog he apparently brought from home. "Do you have any better idea?" I snapped, dousing the wood in lighter fluid. Saul shrugged.
"I was gonna say we take it to a volcano, but I'm broke. You're not exactly swimming in first class miles."
I glared at him as I struck the match. The fire roared to life, flames crackling and licking at the edges of the pit. I held the shirt at arm's length, my heart racing. This was it. This was freedom.
"Goodbye, you pineapple bastard,"
I muttered, tossing the shirt into the inferno. For a moment, it was perfect. The shirt caught fire immediately, the embroidered pineapples curling and blackening in the heat. Saul cheered, holding his hot dog aloft like a gladiator's sword.
"Victory!"
he shouted. But then the wind shifted. A sudden gust blew smoke and embers directly at us, singeing my eyes and sending Saul into a coughing fit.
"Dude, is it supposed to do that?"
he wheezed, waving his hot dog at the swirling smoke.
"No, it's not supposed to do that,"
I snapped, shielding my face. The smoke thickened, spiraling upwards in a way that was decidedly unnatural. The fire roared louder, and I swore I heard something. Like a faint, high-pitched laughter. The flame surged higher, and then, just as quickly as it had started, the fire died.
"What the hell?"
Saul whispered. We stared at the pit. The wood was still smoldering, but the shirt was gone. Not burned to ash, not reduced to cinders. Just gone.
"Well,"
Saul said after a long silence,
"that's either really good or really bad."
I wanted to agree, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. The air felt heavier, and the smell of smoke had been replaced by something tropical. Saul sniffed the air.
"Do you smell pineapple gasoline?"
Before I could answer, the fire pit exploded. I'm not talking a little pop or crackle. I mean a full-on explosion, sending chunks of wood and dirt flying. Saul and I hit the ground as debris rained down around us. When the dust settled, the fire pit was gone, replaced by a smoking crater. And in the center of the crater, pristine and utterly unharmed, was the pineapple shirt.
"This is some poltergeist-level shit,"
Saul said, standing up and brushing dirt off his pants. I didn't respond. I couldn't.
All I could do was stare at the shirt, its embroidered pineapples glinting mockingly in the sunlight. Saul nudged me.
So, what now?
I took a deep breath, my hands shaking. We find a volcano. Back inside, I grabbed my laptop and started searching for flights. Saul sat on the couch, eating chips like this was all perfectly normal.
So where do you think the closest volcano is?
He asked. The Three Sisters, I grumbled, scrolling through travel options. Saul's eyes lit up.
Sweet. It's not Hawaii, but I've always wanted to go.
We can hit the springs, drink Mai Tais.
That's in Florida, not Oregon, Saul. Totally different states. Besides, we're getting rid of the shirt, not sightseeing. Saul shrugged.
Hey, I'm just saying. If we're going to fight cursed fashion, we might as well enjoy the view.
By the time Saul and I were packed and ready to leave for our impromptu volcano adventure, the shirt was back to its usual tricks. I swear I saw it twitch when I threw it in a suitcase. Twitch! Like it was alive! I almost burned a whole bag, but Saul convinced me otherwise.
Save it for the volcano,
he said, tossing snacks into the car.
Let's not waste all the good firepower on your driveway.
I wasn't so sure, but we didn't have time for arguments. Between the exploding fire pit and the pineapple-scented nightmares plaguing me into the previous night, I just wanted to get this over with. The drive started out normal enough, if you could call traveling across several states with a haunted Hawaiian shirt normal. Saul, ever the optimist, had turned the trip into a full-blown road trip experience.
Snacks?
He asked, holding up a bag of chips. No.
Playlist?
I glared at him. If you put on anything with a steel drum, I'm jumping out of this car. Saul grinned and hit play. It was Jimmy Buffett. Of course it was. 3 hours in, and the first weird thing happened. We were driving through a stretch of highway surrounded by trees when the car started making a strange noise.
Is that the engine?
Saul asked, leaning forward. No, I said, gripping the wheel tighter. It's coming from the trunk. Saul turned to look at the back seat.
You sure? Maybe the snack shifted or...
We both froze.
It's moving,
Saul whispered, his eyes wide. I pulled over to the side of the road, my heart pounding.
Pop the trunk.
You pop the trunk.
I'm not going back there. That's your cursed pineapple demon.
We stared at each other for a moment before I sighed and got out of the car. Saul followed, clutching a tire iron like it was going to do anything against a supernatural piece of fabric. When I opened the trunk, the shirt was sitting exactly where I had left it.
It's just a shirt,
Saul said, sounding relieved. Yeah, I said, though I didn't believe it. Then the shirt moved. Not a lot, just a slight flutter, like it was caught in a breeze. Except there was no breeze. Saul screamed, dropped a tire iron, and bolted back to the car. I slammed the trunk shut and followed, locking the doors behind me.
I hate this. I hate this so much.
Saul muttered, curling into a ball in the passenger seat. Just keep your eyes on the road and your snacks to yourself, I said, starting the car again. The next several hours were tense. Every little sound made us jump, and the radio mysteriously cut out any time we tried to switch from Margaritaville. By the time we reached our first motel, we were both a bundle of nerves. Saul insisted on bringing the shirt inside.
What if someone steals the car?
He argued. Let them, I said, but he won anyway. That night, I barely slept. I kept imagining the shirt creeping closer, dragging itself across the floor like something out of a horror movie. At one point, I woke up to Saul screaming.
It's on me! It's on me!
He yelled, flailing in his bed. It wasn't. The shirt was still folded neatly on the chair, looking smug as ever. You're losing it,
I said, though I wasn't sure if I meant him or me. The next day, things got worse. Somewhere in the middle of nowhere, the car died.
You've got to be kidding me,
I groaned, pulling to the side of the road. Saul stared at the dashboard wide-eyed.
Dude, look at the temperature gauge.
It was spiking red. Steam poured out from under the hood, and the smell of pineapples filled the air.
This is it. We're gonna die in a pineapple-scented hellscape.
I ignored him and got out to check the engine. The radiator was hissing, and the smell of fruit punch was overwhelming. I glanced at the trunk, half expecting the shirt to pop out like a cartoon villain.
What now?
Saul asked, leaning out the window. We wait for it to cool down, I said, and we don't open the trunk. Hours later, we managed to get back on the road, but the shirt wasn't done with us. By the time we reached the next town, the car had mysteriously lost two hubcaps. The air conditioning only blew hot air, and the radio was stuck on a static-filled loop of what sounded like the SpongeBob SquarePants theme song.
This shirt is going to kill us,
Saul said, slumping in his seat. Not if we kill it first, I muttered. I didn't know how, but I was more determined than ever to see this cursed thing destroyed. If it wanted a fight, it was going to get one. Next stop, the volcano. We arrived at the base of the Three Sisters, a totally legit name for a trio of volcanoes, according to the pamphlet I picked up at the gas station. The drive up had been uneventful, but the shirt's ominous presence hung over us like a pineapple-patterned storm cloud. Every now and then, I'd catch Saul staring at it like he was waiting for it to sprout arms and strangle us both. I couldn't blame him. I was waiting for the same thing.
This is it,
Saul said as we parked the car.
The moment of truth. The final battle. The pineapple reckoning.
The hike up the volcano was brutal. The trail was steep, the air was thin, and Saul insisted on narrating our journey like he was the host of a nature documentary.
And here we see the majestic idiot,
he said, pointing at me.
In its natural habitat, hauling a cursed shirt to its doom.
Shut up, Saul.
The idiot doesn't respond well to criticism,
he continued, dodging a rock I chucked at him.
But it perseveres, driven by an inexplicable need to tempt fate.
By the time we reached the crater, we were both drenched in sweat and out of breath. The volcano was dormant, but the heat from the lava below made the air shimmer like a bad special effect. I pulled the shirt out of my backpack and held it up. This is it. The end of the line. The shirt didn't respond, but I could feel its malevolence radiating off it like heat waves. Or maybe that was just the volcano. Either way, I was ready to be rid of it.
Any last words?
Saul asked, holding his phone up to record. I glared at him. Really? You're filming this?
For posterity. Or, you know, evidence for when we inevitably get blamed for whatever happens next.
I stepped closer to the edge of the crater, the shirt in my hands. The ground beneath me felt unsteady, like the volcano was waking up just to see what kind of idiots would throw cursed laundry into it. I hesitated for a moment, then took a deep breath.
Good riddance,
I muttered, and threw the shirt into the abyss. For a moment, nothing happened. The shirt tumbled into the molten lava below, and I felt a flicker of hope. Maybe it was over. Maybe I could finally go back to my normal non-pineapple-infested life. Then the volcano roared. I stumbled back as a spurt of steam shot into the air. The ground shook violently, and Saul screamed like a man who had just realized he left his wallet in the car.
What did you do?
He yelled, grabbing my arm.
I threw the shirt in! Isn't that what we wanted?
No! Yes, but not this!
He gestured wildly at the inferno unfolding before us.
This is not what I signed up for!
The newly emitted spurt of lava was glowing in eerie pineapple yellow, and the scent of burnt fruit filled the air. A low guttural sound rumbled from the crater, like the volcano itself was laughing at us. And then it appeared. The shirt, or what was left of it. It rose from the hot magma, its fabric glowing with an unholy light. The little embroidered pineapples were now tiny flaming faces, each one grinning with malevolent glee. The shirt hovered above the crater, pulsing with dark energy.
"We've made it stronger!"
Saul cried, his voice cracking.
"You idiot! You've created a fire demon!"
"How was I supposed to know that would happen?"
The shirt-turned lava monster let out a deafening roar, and the ground beneath us cracked. Lava began to seep out of the fissures, and the air was thick with heat and panic.
"We need to get out of here!"
I yelled, grabbing Saul's arm.
"No kidding!"
he snapped, stumbling after me as we scrambled down the trail. The descent was chaos. The ground continued to shake, and chunks of molten rock rained down around us. At one point, Saul tripped and nearly rolled off the side of the mountain, but I managed to grab him just in time.
"I'm too young to die,"
he wailed, clutching my arm like a lifeline.
"You're 42,
I shouted.
"You've had a good run."
By the time we reached the car, we were both covered in soot and wheezing like a pair of asthmatic hyenas. The volcano roared behind us, but we didn't look back. I slammed the car into gear, and we peeled out of the parking lot like our lives depended on it. Because they did. As we sped away, the volcano erupted in earnest. A massive plume of ash and smoke filled the sky, and I could see the glowing outline of the shirt still hovering above the crater, like a vengeful pineapple god.
Is it following us?"
Saul asked, his voice trembling. I glanced in the rearview mirror. The shirt wasn't following us, not yet anyway, but I had a sinking feeling this wasn't over.
"No, but I don't think we've seen the last of it."
Saul groaned and slumped in his seat.
"Next time you find a cool shirt at a thrift store, just buy a damn house hippo instead."
I couldn't argue with that. We drove through the night, Saul half asleep and mumbling incoherently about lava demons, while I kept one eye on the road and the other on the rearview mirror. The volcano had vanished into the distance, but the lingering scent of smoke and burnt fruit made it feel like it was right behind us. The silence between us was heavy, broken only by the occasional muttered curse as Saul shifted in his seat. He had been through a lot. We both had. But at least we were alive. For now. We pulled into a dingy motel just as the sun began to rise. The neon sign flickered ominously, and I half expected it to spell out Doom Hotel instead of Dream Haven. It seemed fitting, considering the cosmic pineapple horror we had just unleashed. The guy at the front desk barely looked up as I handed over my credit card.
"One night?"
he asked, his voice as lifeless as the wilted fern on the counter. "Maybe two," I said, glancing at Saul, who was slumped in a lobby chair like a deflated balloon.
"Suit yourself."
He handed me a key.
"Roommate. Don't clog the sink."
I didn't ask. Our room smelled like stale air and regret, but it had two beds and a working lock, which was more than I'd hoped for. Saul collapsed onto his bed without a word, his face buried in the flat, lumpy pillow.
"Saul, we made it,"
I said, trying to sound upbeat. He groaned.
"Did we, though? Did we really?"
I didn't have an answer. Sleep didn't come easy. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw the shirt glowing with unholy light, its little pineapple faces sneering at me. The volcano's roar echoed in my mind, and I could still feel the ground shaking beneath me. At some point, I must have drifted off, because I woke up to Saul shaking me, his eyes wide with panic.
"It's here."
What's here? I mumbled, still half asleep.
The shirt.
I bolted upright, my heart pounding.
What? Where?
Saul pointed to the corner of the room. The shirt was draped over a chair, looking as innocent as ever. No glowing, no ominous humming, just a stupid pineapple-patterned shirt. No, I said, shaking my head.
That's impossible. We threw it in the volcano. We saw it melt.
Well, it's back,
Saul said, his voice rising.
Like a bad penny. Or an evil penny. Or an evil pineapple penny.
I stared at the shirt, trying to make sense of it. Maybe someone else had the same shirt. Saul scoffed.
Oh, sure. Because evil cursed pineapple shirts are all the rage this season.
He had a point. I stood up and cautiously approached the shirt, half expecting it to leap at me like some kind of fabric vampire. But it just sat there, mocking me with its stitched sunglasses and smug little smile.
What do we do?
Saul asked, pacing the room like a caged animal.
We can't burn it, can't bury it, and apparently we can't throw it into a freaking volcano.
I didn't have an answer. But I knew one thing for sure. I couldn't keep living like this. The shirt had to go. We packed up and left the motel without a word to the guy at the front desk, who probably wouldn't have cared even if we had told him about the cosmic horrors we were fleeing from. Saul wanted to head to a church or maybe a psychic, but I had a different plan. If we can't destroy it, I said, gripping the wheel tightly, we'll just have to contain it.
Contain it?
Saul repeated, his voice tinged with skepticism.
Like, put it in a box?
Exactly.
Okay, but what kind of box is going to hold an unkillable death shirt?
I thought about it for a moment. A really strong box. Saul sighed.
Brilliant plan, Einstein. Really airtight.
We ended up at a storage facility on the edge of town. It was the kind of place where dreams and probably a few bodies went to die. The guy at the counter looked about as trustworthy as the shirt itself, but I didn't care. Desperation had a way of lowering your standards. I need your biggest, strongest storage unit, I said, slapping a wad of cash onto the counter. The guy raised an eyebrow.
You hiding something dangerous?
I hesitated. Yes. The storage unit was a steel box the size of a small garage, and it reeked of mildew and bad decisions. Saul stood in the corner, holding the shirt at arm's length like it was a ticking time bomb.
This is your plan? Lock it up and hope for the best?
Got a better idea? He didn't. We placed the shirt in the center of the unit and backed away slowly, as if it might explode. Then I slammed the door shut and locked it with the heaviest padlock I could find. Done, I said, brushing my hands off like I had just saved the world. Saul didn't look convinced.
You really think that's going to hold it?
I shrugged. It's worth a shot. We drove away in silence, the weight of the past few days settling over us like a heavy blanket. For the first time in what felt like forever, I felt a glimmer of hope. Maybe, just maybe, this nightmare was over. But as we pulled onto the highway, I glanced in the rearview mirror and saw a familiar flash of yellow and green. The shirt was back, and it was in the back seat. Saul screamed. I screamed. The shirt didn't scream, but I could feel its smug satisfaction radiating through the car.
Pull over! Pull over!
Saul yelled, scrambling to get as far away from the shirt as possible. I swerved onto the shoulder, my hands shaking. The shirt sat there as casual as ever, like it hadn't just defied all logic and physics to haunt us yet again.
What do we do now?
I stared at the shirt, my mind racing. I don't know, Saul. I just don't know. For once, he didn't have a snarky comeback. We sat there in silence, the three of us, me, Saul, and the pineapple shirt from hell. And I knew deep down that this wasn't the end. Not even close. The pineapple shirt was back. It lounged in the back seat like it had been on vacation, smugly daring us to do something about it. Saul stared at it, his eyes wide and twitching like he was on the brink of a nervous breakdown.
"This shirt,"
he said, pointing a trembling finger at it,
"is the devil's laundry."
I sighed, gripping the wheel tighter. "No, Saul. If it were the devil's laundry, it would have smelled like brimstone. This is worse. It smells ironic."
"Why didn't the volcano work?"
Saul moaned, his head in his hands.
"This was our big finish, our cinematic climax."
"Apparently it's the kind of story that drags on and makes you wonder why you ever started listening to it," I muttered, glancing at the rearview mirror. The shirt's little embroidered pineapple seemed to smirk at me. I swear I saw one of them adjust its sunglasses. "We can't stop," I said finally. "If it came back after being melted in molten rock, there's no destroying it." Saul perked up, his despair momentarily overridden by manic energy.
"Then we don't destroy it. We outsmart it."
"Outsmart a shirt?" I asked, raising an eyebrow. "What are we going to do? Challenge it to chess?"
"No, no. We get rid of it in a way that it can't worm its way back into our lives."
"And how do you propose we do that, Solomon? Mail it to a foreign country with no return address?" His face lit up despite the use of his full name.
"Exactly."
An hour later, we were in the parking lot of a rundown post office that looked like it hadn't seen a fresh coat of paint since the Nixon administration. Saul had insisted we find somewhere remote to reduce the chances of the shirt making a dramatic reappearance before we could ship it off. Inside, the clerk, a wiry old man with a sour expression, looked up from his crossword puzzle and gave us a once-over. He clearly didn't care about our life or death situation, but then again, neither did most of the people we had encountered on this cursed journey.
Shipping something?"
he asked flatly.
"Yes,"
Saul said, holding the shirt at arm's length as though it might bite him.
"To somewhere far, far away."
"How far are we talking? Europe? Asia?"
"Farther,"
Saul said, his voice a mix of desperation and glee.
"Antarctica."
The clerk blinked.
"You want to ship a shirt to Antarctica?"
"Yes," I said, slamming a wad of cash onto the counter. "No questions asked." The clerk shrugged.
Your money, your funeral."
Saul and I wrapped the shirt in three layers of bubble wrap, a padded envelope, and a box that looked like it had seen better days. As the clerk slapped a shipping label onto the box and tossed it onto a pile of outgoing packages, I felt a surge of hope. This was it. The end of the line for our pineapple pattern tormentor. Or so I thought. We left the post office feeling lighter than we had in days. Saul even managed to crack a joke about tropical fruit, and for once I laughed. We drove back toward town, already planning how we'd rebuild our lives now that we were free from the shirt's malevolent influence. But as soon as we pulled into Saul's driveway, my phone buzzed. I glanced at the screen and felt my stomach drop. It was an email from the shipping company. "Delivery failed. Return to sender." "No," I whispered, my voice trembling. Saul leaned over, reading the message on my phone.
"It's not possible. We just sent it away. We saw them ship it. And we didn't use a return address."
I didn't have time to answer. A soft, familiar sound caught my ear, like fabric rustling in the breeze. Slowly, we turned toward the house. There, Hanging neatly on Saul's porch railing was the shirt. Its pineapples practically glowed with malevolent cheerfulness. Saul screamed. I screamed. And then we both started laughing. Hysterically, uncontrollably. Because what else could we do? The shirt had won. It's been 6 months since the pineapple shirt came into our lives. We tried everything. Burning, burying, even driving it to the middle of the desert and leaving it there. No matter what we do, it always comes back. We've accepted that we're stuck with it. It's like some kind of tropical-themed curse. Saul has moved in with me since his house mysteriously burned down. Not saying it was the shirt, but come on. We've set up a system. The shirt spends 1 week with me, then 1 week with Saul. We call it custody. It's the only way we can keep from losing what's left of our sanity. Every now and then, the shirt's curse strikes again. A neighbor trips on their front steps. A co-worker gets food poisoning from bad sushi. Small, petty inconveniences for the most part. Nothing like the catastrophic disasters of those first few weeks. It's like the shirt is content to toy with us now. A predator playing with its prey. I've tried to find humor in it, and honestly, it's not all bad. Saul and I have become close friends through our shared misery. We've even started a podcast, Cursed Couture, Tales of the Killer Pineapple Shirt. We've got a decent following, and if we ever make enough money, maybe we'll hire a team of scientists to figure out how to neutralize the damn thing. Until then, we live cautiously. We keep the shirt happy. And in return, it keeps its chaos to a minimum. It's a delicate balance, but it works. Most of the time. The other day, I found a new pair of socks in my closet. They were bright yellow, patterned with tiny pineapples. And I swear, I saw one of them wink at me.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And that was Hell in Hawaiian Print by our old pal N.M. Brown. A good reminder that if you can't stay in style, sometimes the style stays with you. I'm thinking about sending that one to worstlinesever.com. Nice work, Jeff. You really dug deep on that one. Don't quit your day job. A little about the author. N.M. Brown is a Florida native, wife and mother of three, who reads about chasing away monsters to her kids before bed, before writing them down to get them out of her head. She's an author whose work appears in over 40 horror anthologies, most recently Tales from the Lark Side, which you can find a link to up in the show notes. She also has a collection published with Velox Books called Origin of Delusions, 25 Tales of Terror and Supernatural Horror. Also linked above. She's also the narrator of 8 books on Audible currently, under the pseudonym Victoria Voss. Go stalk her. Thanks, Nat.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. Get those submissions in by the 26th, y'all. Everyone's got a chance. And as always, go fuck yourselves. I love you all. Night, y'all.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.